few prayers are uttered in our midst without something being said in those prayers about peace. And I suspect that very few of our private prayers are uttered without there being some thoughts given and words expressed to God about the subject of peace. I would imagine that if we were to ask those of us in this building tonight to begin to make a list of what you consider to be the most important concepts or sets of circumstances in the world today, that somewhere in the first three would be the idea of peace. There are just not many things that are more important to us than that. The Bible talks about following after peace. Follow after the things which make for peace. Follow peace with all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Be at peace with God. The peace of God that passeth all understanding shall keep your hearts and minds. I think if I ask you, most of you could tell me who made all those statements. It was from the pen of the Apostle Paul. Romans 14:19, he said, let us follow after the things which make for peace. Hebrews 12:14, follow peace with all men. Romans 12:18, if it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Romans 5:1, being justified by faith, we have peace with God. Philippians 4:7, the peace of God that passeth all understanding shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ. And yet, it was that same man who said, fight the good fight of faith. 1 Timothy 6:12. It was that same man who described in detail the armor that is to be taken up and worn and used by the Christian soldier. Ephesians 6. And it was that same man who, in perhaps the last words that he ever wrote, said in 2 Timothy 4, I have fought a good fight. Is there a conflict? Is there a conflict between the idea of peace on the one hand and fighting on the other? I suggest to you that there is no conflict. That in fact it is impossible to have one without the other. Remember, we're dealing with lessons on Sunday evenings that suggest the idea of a paradox, something that seems to contradict that does not. And tonight the idea before us is that the way to peace is to fight. I don't know whether you agree with me or not, but I believe that one of the reasons that we have the peaceful setting here tonight in 1990 in Henderson, Tennessee is because of some of the battles that have been fought throughout the world in the past. I rather imagine that there are those of us in the audience tonight who can remember the time that someone in the family was lost in battle. And those of us that are younger can remember having been told the story by those of us in our families of a brother or sister, or perhaps maybe for many of us it was an uncle or a father or a grandfather, who was killed in battle in one of the conflicts. Maybe even some can remember back to World War II and even the stories of World War I. And there were those who lost their lives to defend the freedoms that you and I enjoy tonight, including this freedom of being together in this quiet place to worship. And so I think even in that sense, that the way to peace sometimes has come through some battles that were fought. Fought by people who had some principles. Principles in many instances that included their belief in God. their belief in the right to the freedom of worship and ready to stand up for that right and give their lives if necessary to make it possible for us to worship in freedom. Yes, the way to peace sometimes has been through the battle and through having to stand up and sometimes having to fight. But I'm not thinking about that so much tonight. We want to bring it home a little bit more to us in a personal way. We're thinking about three kinds of peace this evening. Number one, peace with oneself, and that's where peace has to begin. There can never be peace of any kind unless there is peace, first of all, in the heart of the individual. And I think we've even understood this if we've talked about peace among nations, that somehow or other we've got to get down and get this peace started in the hearts of men and women. That's the kind of peace that Paul was talking about in Philippians 4:7. Peace of God that passeth understanding, that shall keep your heart and your mind to where you can go home tonight and pillow your head and close your eyes and sleep and enjoy a peaceful night's rest because there is a peaceful attitude in your heart. The second kind of peace, which may affect that and be affected by it, is the peace that we have with one another. Be reminded of two of the verses that we noticed earlier, Romans 14:19 and Hebrews 12:14. Follow after the things which make for peace, and follow peace with all men. If you're going to pillow your head tonight in the peace that passeth understanding, there is the need of you being able to be at peace with all men. And then there is, in the third place, peace with God. Now, I don't really know how to rank these, which is more important, because they're really all related in one way or another. There in Romans 5:1, he said, being justified by faith, we have peace with God. Peace with God. I suppose that most of the lessons that we've brought in the last few weeks have been aimed in that direction. Lessons that have been especially designed to encourage us to think about our relationship with God, whether or not we are Christians, whether or not we are faithful Christians, whether or not we are ready to live, whether or not we're ready to die, whether or not we're ready to live with God in that mansion up yonder. All of these things that we've talked about are related to this idea of peace. Peace with God, peace with others, and peace with self. But I'm here to tell you tonight that that kind of peace doesn't come cheap. And it doesn't come accidentally. There has been blood shed by our ancestors, and there was blood shed by the Son of God himself on the cross in order to make it possible for us to have that kind of peace. There have been battles fought for the truth, some recorded on the pages of God's Word before he closed the Holy Writ at about the end of the first century. Many others described on the pages of secular history that help us to realize that martyrs have literally stood up and fought to defend the cause of Christ, knowing how to flee when it was necessary, knowing how to turn the other cheek when it was necessary, and yet ready to stand up for Christ whatever the cost. And I suggest to you that in that sense there has been the fight for Christ down through the years. The way to peace is to fight for what is right. If you're going to have peace with yourself, there are some things that you must fight on a personal basis. There's an indication of this given in a little short verse in 1 Peter 2:11. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lust, notice this, which war against the soul. He suggests that there is a battle going on even in the heart of each Christian. He particularly mentions lust here, and that's only one of the things against which we must fight if we're going to have peace of mind. There is no way, young man, young woman, older man, or older woman, that you can fill your heart with lustful thinking towards somebody else and pillow your head at night in the peace that passeth all understanding. There's just not room in the human heart for lustful thoughts and a peaceful attitude. And so, if we're going to be at peace, we must fight against those lustful thoughts that war against the soul. Those lusts are warring against the soul, trying to take the soul away from God and in the direction of Satan. And if there's a war going on, there has to be another side to it. Not only is that side of evil warring against us, we must put up a battle against them. And that means we must fight against lust. We must fight against anger. Controlling the temper is not easy sometimes, but we're told to not let the sun go down upon our wrath, Ephesians 4. We must fight against hatred of people. Nothing wrong with hatred of sin and hatred of evil. We're told to hate evil, abhor that which is evil, Romans 12. But there's not a person living that we should hate. We should never allow ourselves to hate a person. Again, there's just not room in the heart for the hatred for people and love for God at the same time. So stated in 1 John 4:20 and 21. You can't love the brother that you've seen. There's no way you can love God whom you have seen. We must learn to fight against selfishness. And I suggest to you further, in a personal way for all of us, if we're going to have peace of mind, we must learn to fight against guilt feelings. Of course, it goes without saying. Well, perhaps we do need to be reminded from time to time that those guilt feelings need to be taken care of in the right way. We need to turn to God. We need to receive forgiveness. We need to forgive ourselves. There's no way tonight that you and I can go to sleep in peace if we have lust and anger and hatred and selfishness and envy and covetousness and guilt feelings in our heart. And so I suggest to you tonight, for personal peace, the way to peace is to fight. Fight against these wrong attitudes. Clear your heart of those. You cannot control how another person feels toward you, but you can control how you feel toward everybody else. And there cannot be true peace unless you do that. Then there is that peace with others. Follow peace with all men. Let us follow after the things which make for peace. Let's take the second of those two and look at it for a moment. Let's follow after the things that make for peace. The rest of the verse says, and the things wherewith one may edify another. That word edify means build up. That suggests to us, if we're going to have peace with each other, that we must fight against backbiting and gossip and tale-bearing. Oh, it's just not possible to have peace with other people when you talk behind somebody else's back. Because usually the person who will talk and listen to you about somebody will talk and listen at somebody else's doorstep about you. And before long, that which you have said to one is reported to another, and that especially which is behind somebody's back begins to drive wedges. And there just cannot be any peace. If we're going to be at peace with other people, we've got to fight immorality. I just quoted the first part of that verse of Hebrews 12:14. Follow peace with all men. It's rather interesting that the next two words are and holiness. Follow peace with all men and holiness. I just don't believe it's possible for a person to be at peace with others if he's involved in immoral activity with other people. To where when he meets people on the street, he wonders if they know about his actions with somebody else that person may know. Or even meets the person with whom he's been involved in immoral actions. And young people, this needs to be understood. And wonder if anybody else knows, to the extent that sometimes it's hard to even meet people on the street without hanging your head. Oh, there's just no way you can have either peace of mind or peace with other people. unless you fight against immorality. Because sooner or later, if you're involved in immoral actions with somebody else, the devil will use that against you and against them and involve it in such a way that it's just almost impossible to be at peace. I like the advice Paul gave Timothy in 1 Timothy 5. Now I'm summarizing, but he said, Timothy, you live and act in such a way with all other people so that you can consider every older woman that you know as if she were your mother, and every younger woman that you know as if she were your sister, and every older man you know as if he were your father, and every younger man that you know as if he were your brother. Now when you're able to do that with people, and you fight against immoral activities and are not involved in those things, you're able to live at peace with other people. And magnifying on that immoral attitude just a little bit, let's think about honesty in our dealings with other people. Verse 18 in Romans 12 says, if it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Is it by accident? I don't think so. That the very verse before that says, provide things honest or honorable in the sight of all men. How are you going to live at peace with all men? You must fight against cheating and dishonesty and trying to do something that is not above board. The way to have peace with other people is to fight against backbiting and gossip and immorality and dishonest dealings, and stand for the things that are just the opposite. And you know, even when we think about peace with God, the same thing is true. We talked about that peace with God there in Romans 5:1, and the peace of God that passeth all understanding in Philippians 4 and verse 7. It's a rather interesting verse in James, the 4th chapter and verse 4, where in the first part of it, he particularly is talking about the adulterers and adulteresses. And he's not talking about physical adultery here. He's talking about spiritual adultery. Know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. Now this word enemy suggests the idea of a battle. And he says, if you're going to stand over here on the side of the world and court the world, though you're supposed to be married to God, and you're involved in spiritual adultery with worldliness, then you are an enemy with God. If you're a friend of the world, there's a battle line clearly drawn, two sides on it. And the opposite of what he's saying there is, if you're going to be a friend of God, you must be an enemy of the world. If you're a friend of the world, you're an enemy with God. If you're a friend of God, you're an enemy of the world. And so I say to you tonight, the way to peace with God is to fight worldliness and worldly matters. To take a stand against worldliness, and if there's ever been a time that it's needed, it's in our time. Take a stand against those things that are of a worldly nature, because they are enmity. They are enemies with God. And if we're going to be on His side, we've got to fight against those things. The Bible clearly teaches us that we are to defend the truth. But it also teaches us, particularly in Jude 3, that we are to contend for the gospel and for the truth. If any of you have ever been involved in warlike scenes and battles, you know that there is not only the importance of defending, but there is the importance of an offense and contending for that which is right. And all of this is mentioned very clearly in the Bible, where we are given that Christian armor. And that description of how we enlist in God's army, and we put on that armor, and we stand and we fight in the army of God. We both contend and we defend. Contend for the faith and defend the truth. And brethren, in some instances today, we're on the firing line. There are those that would undermine the truth of God. There are those that would say that God's teaching's not important, that the doctrine of the Bible is not important, that the gospel is not important. And we're at a point when we need to take a stand, to stand up for Christ and stand on the firmness of that word, realizing that He is our mighty fortress, and prepare ourselves for battle to defend and to contend for the truth of God. And we'll never have true peace unless we're willing to do that. I think Paul summed it up to some extent in the first chapter of 1 Timothy. In verses 18 and 19 of 1 Timothy 1, he talks about a war, and then in connection with that, he talks about having the right kind of conscience. He says, "This charge I commit unto thee, son Timothy, according to the prophecies which went before us, or went before on thee, that thou by them mightest war a good warfare." There's the fight. "Holding faith and a good conscience." There's the peace. "Which some having put away concerning faith have made shipwreck." I understand Paul to be saying there in those words exactly what we're saying in this lesson tonight. The way to peace is to fight. Fight a good warfare, he says. Fight a good warfare in your own mind against those evil thoughts and bad attitudes that can drive a wedge even in your own thinking. Fight against immorality and dishonesty that would cause problems between you and others, that you might have peace with all men. And fight against evil. Fight against false doctrine. Fight against the devil, and fight for the Bible and for the truth and for true Christianity. Fight that good warfare. And he says when you do that, you can have a good conscience. You can have that peace that passeth all understanding, that shall keep your heart and mind through Christ Jesus. Would you have peace in your own heart with everybody and with God? The only way to peace is to fight against the devil and against his forces. And in reality, all of the things that we've talked about, those problems in the mind, those problems between and among people, those problems between us and God, all of those are the evil actions of the devil. And in describing that gospel armor in Ephesians 6, he says, "Put this on, that you'll be able to stand against the wiles of the evil one." What are you going to do? You're going to fight. Fight the devil. Fight the things that are evil. And the end result will be a large degree of peace here and ultimate peace yonder. In the extending of the invitation tonight, I want to go about it in a little bit different way. We usually talk about Christ is extending the invitation. God is encouraging you to come. But since we're emphasizing the need of fighting tonight, I want to extend it in a way to suggest to you what you're fighting. If you're not a Christian tonight, the devil is saying to you, don't go, don't be baptized, don't obey, don't become a Christian. If you're a wayward child of God and need to respond, the devil is saying, don't repent, don't confess, and don't pray. I say to you, the way to peace is to fight against that devil and come to the front lines right now as together we stand and sing.
And God, and God for Jesus.